Imagine a place where you are never far from your next adventure. Welcome to Prince Edward Island, Canada, a destination where the breathtaking views rejuvenate the soul. Discover 700 miles of coastline with white sand beaches and red cliffs, the freshest flavors from land and sea, world-class golf, outdoor adventures, and authentic cultural experiences. Come find your island, Prince Edward Island, the official travel destination of the NHL and a proud partner of the Boston Bruins. Learn more at explorepei.com.
Miss something?
This is a black and gold freight train.
Catch the Hockey Show podcast at 98.5thesportshub.com and the Sports Hub app.
Marchand waits between the rings in his own zone, working left to right. And he charges ahead, grabs the puck slowly over the line right side, into the right circle, cruises into the slot, head fake, shoots Varlamov, the stick save. And the New York Islanders come up with a 3-2 shootout victory over the Boston Bruins here at TD Garden.
All right, welcome into another edition of the Sports Hub Hockey Show here on 98.5 The Sports Hub as we come to you from the Town Fair Tire Studios. Ryan Johnston joined by Judd Surratt and Bob Beers as the Bruins get ready for a matchup tonight against the Nashville Predators, which we'll talk about a bit. And we will also talk quite a bit today about the little bit of a drought the Bruins are going through here.
You're so negative, right?
I know. It's everything's fine. Everything's fine. It's okay.
Heard your last caller.
Yeah. He's, you know, they won
just negative.
They won the Super Bowl last year. So, you know, all is forgiven. That's the way it works. The Bruins made it to the Stanley Cup final last year and got off to a great start this year. Have gone into a little bit of a struggle here over the last eight games. Just one win. What are you guys seeing from this team? What's, you know, what's the root cause of the issues right now? Why has this team suddenly gone into, I won't say, it's not even, not a tailspin, but just a dip in their results?
I see a couple things. I mean, first of all, they're 10 points up in the division.
Mm-hmm.
Despite the way that they've played and despite some of the losses that they've had, they're 10 points up in the division. They're almost halfway through the season. So, you know, is there human nature to relax a little bit? It seems like it. Doesn't seem like the urgency was there for a while. It seems like it's better now, to be honest, but you know, even though they're not getting the results, but you know, they went through how many games where it's just like first couple periods, you end up down a goal, down two goals, and then you turn it on in the third and come back and, you know, you get a win or you get a point. Just, I mean, right now, they're 10 points up in the division. So lack of urgency, one. Everybody predicted, I shouldn't say everybody, but most people predicted, the Bruins themselves predicted that they would go through something like this at some point in the season. They're going through it. They got to get through it. They got to get past it. It's a little bit of a wall. They continue to get points. You know, they're finding ways to get points, even though they're not at their best. And, hey, is it good? No. Do they need to improve in a number of areas? Yes, and we can address those as we move along here today. But they're 10 points up. The division, the Atlantic division, is not good. Some of the Metro teams have actually closed on them. Pittsburgh's only 4 points behind them. Mm. And Pittsburgh's in the first wild card in the Metro. So, you know, you got the Islanders, I think Carolina, Pittsburgh, of course, Washington. You know, all those teams are right there with the Bruins. Washington's actually a little bit ahead of them. But nobody in the Atlantic has done anything, including Tampa. Nobody's done anything. So they're comfortable.
Yeah, they don't have anybody putting heat on them. I totally agree with Bob. I think what we've seen here in the last couple of games is it's just one play here or there that they're just not executing, or another team is able to execute against them, that it's been the difference in the game. Because we have seen some elevated performances. They didn't give up much against the Islanders the other night. Mistake here or there.
They didn't have much offensively in two periods either. So, no, I mean, two ways to look at that one, right?
10 shots, you know, not, you know, we're not shooting on the power play, or did not get shots through. in those first two periods on the first three power plays, and then all of a sudden things started to change around.
Yeah, they were a different team in the third.
What did they have, 16 shots in that final 20 minutes, three more in overtime, had chances to win the game. So I think it's that subtle difference. But getting back to the wall or whatever speed bump, whatever you may want to call it, after last year's long run in the playoffs, I think other general managers whose teams have gone that deep or who have won Stanley Cups, what they'll say is if you have a good team, at some point they're going to look during the course of the season, maybe halfway through, and think to themselves, we have another 75 games to play before we vie for a Stanley Cup. So it's hard to ramp it up at that point, maybe midway through the season, to realize what you're going to want to go through once April hits. Are the Bruins experiencing some of that? I think we've got a confluence of a whole different array of factors for the team. And as a result, you've seen them gone winless in 7 of 8.
Yeah, I think, you know, kind of to one of the points that Bob made, you know, we saw this team for a while. It felt like they weren't starting on time. Right. They were, you know, their first periods especially were, you know, were pretty lackluster. And that became a focal point. And, you know, they talked about
it. It wasn't the case at the beginning of the season.
It wasn't. It kind of dipped in, you know, and it became a focal point, a talking point with the team. And now we've seen some of these games where they come out and you see it right off the bat. They start strong. And then it kind of, you know, maybe slips away from them for a little bit in the middle of the game, which is, you know, it does go back a lot to human nature. And, you know, ultimately, I think we all believe that this team is better than they're playing right now. And I think that's where maybe you whether you have a 10-point lead or not, you say, well, I just would like to see them play at their best a little bit more often than we're seeing right now. And they shouldn't go through, as good as they are, an 8-game stretch where they have one win.
Well, what carried them early in the season? They had great goaltending.
Yep.
Right? And the first line, the top line, was, you know, insane. Right? Well, Pastrnak slowed down. Marchand slowed down, goal-scoring-wise especially. Mm-hmm. Those guys have slowed down. They've had some off nights. You know, as the secondary scoring picked it up enough, still looking for certain players in certain positions to see what's going to play out, right? I mean, so as big of a lead as they have right now, almost halfway through the season, still a lot of questions surrounding the roster, right? You know, Judd and I were talking about it the other night. You know, is Coyle going to be your third-line center, or is he going to be a second-line right wing? If he's a second-line right wing, who's going to be your third-line center, and vice versa? Who's playing the wings? You know, what does this team look like come playoff time, mm-hmm. and when it comes down to it? And I think there's a ton of questions still. You know, you've got guys who are going to be there. Where are they going to play? And what's best for the team, and then what do they need to add? So there's – and whether it – does that add come from within, or does it come from outside? There's still a lot of questions, you know. So for me, that's – you know, that's going to be the focus here moving forward, how to improve this team and how to maximize what you have. And there's still a lot of questions there.
617-779-0985, of course, is our number if you want to be a part of the program this morning. Let's open up with Chris in Chicago this morning. Hey, Chris.
Hey, guys. Just a quick question. I know you've probably heard this before, but there is a certain player out who is on the outs with the Kings, and I know that you guys aren't a huge fan of what he does, but he's basically there. You can get this guy for nothing. And I know with the cap issues that the Bruins have right now, it would be something which, you know, potentially would be a nice add. And Bears, you mentioned about secondary scoring. There's been no secondary scoring for last year. There was no secondary scoring, and it kind of stuck out in the playoffs. Why not throw someone like this into the mix and just see what he can do? He's not going to cost you basically anything. In the grand scheme of things, what does it hurt? And the other thing, guys, is I'm a little concerned about the contract and I know it's just been a few games, but for Coyle, that's a lot of money. But just want to hear your thoughts.
I appreciate it. I assume he's talking. He didn't mention him by name, but I assume he was talking about Kovalchuk.
Yeah, a couple things there. First of all, Coyle's going to look, I think, pretty good in a year or two, because is Krejci going to be here?
Right.
I don't know. He might be, but his contract is up after next year. It's something you got to think about. Bergeron's had a lot of wear and tear on his body. That's why some of these younger guys, whether it's Stanika, whether it's Frederick, whether it's Beecher, who's, you know, playing in the World Juniors a couple of years. I mean, you're talking about some of these guys who are centermen, you know, and who's going to be coming through the pipeline and be ready to step in and be ready to play. But Coyle's going to be counted on a little bit more. He's still pretty young, and I think there's games where he's outstanding, you know, at protecting the puck. Does he have the points to show for it? No, not as much. But secondary scoring-wise, his line was excellent last year in the playoffs, actually. Yeah. I mean, his line with Johansson and was it Heinen on the left? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that line was really good in the playoffs. And he put up good numbers. 9 goals last year in the playoffs. And that's pretty good secondary scoring. So they do have it at certain times. Kovalchuk, no, it's not going to cost you a lot. If you can get him, look, I haven't seen him play. He hasn't played in how many games. So I don't know. But talking to some of the Kings people when they were in town, they said, look, he's not an issue. He's not a problem off the ice. He still has the skill level. He's not as slow as people say he is. He's actually fine speed-wise. This is coming from the Kings people. Mm-hmm. But you have to, at the same time, he also plays, he's on his own program. So if you're willing to live with that, a guy like him being on his own program a little bit, you know, being a little high risk, too high risk in certain situations, if you're willing to live with that, that's fine. And if you can get him at a cheap number, and I'm talking
seven,
under,
I mean, that's what everybody's saying, is you can get him at the league minimum.
I don't know if you can or not.
Yeah.
But if you can, if it doesn't work out, you stick him in Providence. It doesn't count against your cap.
I mean, look, I think so, and Ty and I talked about him quite a bit last week, and you know, I understand the idea that, well, you know, if it doesn't cost you anything and, you know, it might be worth the experiment.
Do the Bruins have a better option in-house right now?
Not that I know of. I mean, not that has
David
that,
Backus,
not that
Brett
has
Ritchie,
that potential upside.
Backus, Ritchie, I mean, Kuhlman's hurt. He's on his way back. Seneshin, these are all right-wingers I'm naming.
Back. What gives me pause is, I mean, the Kings gave this guy 3 years and $19 million less than a year and a half ago, and they already cut bait on him, and that does scare me.
They cut bait on him basically in the first season.
There isn't a financial need for them to do it.
I'm
like,
not
they're not searching for cap
fit.
Space. Like, they just said this guy can't help us.
Well, I'm asking, is it worth it? Is it worth the risk? What risk? Is it worth the chance? I don't know.
Yeah.
Because I haven't seen him play. He hasn't, you know, how many games has he played this year? What did you say, 17 games?
Yeah, something like that.
But I haven't seen a game live. He didn't play against the Bruins the other day. So, I mean, that's where you count on your scouts and maybe people that were watching him play early in the season.
You had to watch early.
Yeah, he hasn't played in forever.
No. So.
Well, the other thing is I think the marketplace is also, they're yelling at you that nobody seems to be jumping into the pool. There's some other teams that have some playoff aspirations, or teams like the Islanders and a general manager that had him in Lou Lamoriello in New Jersey signed him to that monster crazy deal with the Devils. That is a team that is in desperate need of some offensive help. But nobody around the National Hockey League has jumped in and grabbed him. He was on the road with the team and didn't play in Boston throughout their entire road trip. I think he was with them until basically he was granted he went on unconditional waivers and he was released from his contract from the team. But no team in the National Hockey League has stepped up to grab him. And to me, that is a huge flashing red light that everybody's saying the same thing. We can get him for nothing. We don't have to trade anything. What is this going to do for our roster? I understand that it's a very low risk. But for another team like the Bruins, you're computing the salary cap on a daily basis.
Yeah.
And even if you're bringing him in at a marginal number, it is still going to impact your ability to add. And clearly we feel like this team can use an addition or two, whether it's up front or on the back end, that they're going to have to address before the trade deadline at the end of February.
It's a black and gold freight train. Freight train. Freight train.
All things Bruins and the NHL. It's the Hockey Show on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Out of all the reindeers, you know you're the mastermind. Run!
Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers with you until 11 o'clock today. Ty Anderson will join us coming up in about 15 minutes. Billy Jaffe will join us in the final half hour of the show today as well. And your calls, welcome throughout, 617-779-0985. Here's Maria in Watertown. Good morning, Maria.
Hi, good morning, guys. Sorry I didn't lead off today. But
sleep in today? What are we doing?
No. I've already been to BJ's this morning.
Got to start on time, much like the Bruins. Got to start on time.
I know. My bad. But just to piggyback on the Ilya Kovalchuk, in the words of Joe Murray, I am out on that gentleman. At this juncture, I need Donnie Sweeney to once and for all resolve the issue of that second line. We have discussed this ad nauseum for, I don't know, it seems like countless seasons. He needs to do what is necessary to solidify that second line, either at the trade deadline or before the trade deadline. We simply cannot waste another year of Zdeno Chara and Brad Marchand and Patrice Bergeron. I simply can't sustain it, and I don't think I'm alone as a fan. Just go all in and get who you need to get to play with David Krejci. And I don't know if you guys talked about this yet, but the one glimmer of hope and play that I've seen over the last 7 to 8 games is Brandon Kerr and Charlie McAvoy. How good have those guys been?
Yeah, all right.
Guys, Merry Christmas.
Hey, Merry Christmas to you. Thanks for the call. To her sentiment, I am – that's where I think I am at this point. Whoever it is that they – assuming they're going to improve at that spot, whoever it is, I want it to be somebody who's not just here for the next 6 months. I want it to be somebody who's going to be here, you know, for the long term, so that we're not having this conversation a year from now as to who's going to be the second line right wing. Because we keep bringing it up, and we, as she said, we have for years now. This has been, you know, one of the weak spots of this team. At some point, they've got to address it in such a way that it's not, you know, you're not out trying to find somebody on the market like you were last year and the year before and the year before.
Sure, I'm all for it. I mean, it's not, obviously it's not easy, otherwise it'd be done already.
Sure.
But yeah, there's, I mean, you go around the league, you look for a young winger who's a certain type of player, who's semi-established, but has a real upside.
But not a superstar.
But has the real upside, right?
Yes.
Or maybe you look somewhere else, but you know, it's going to cost you. And that's some, you know, you're going to have to, you've got to live with what you're going to give away.
Well, let me,
or what, you know, what you're going to move. So
let me get your thought. I mean, Kovalchuk obviously is one that people have talked about.
I'm not,
but putting him aside,
not a huge fan of his. I want to be clear on that. But
there's two names that I keep hearing over and over again, which are Toffoli and Palmieri. Those are the ones.
Did you watch Toffoli the other night?
Who's saying Palmieri? How is he available?
He's available potentially because the Devils.
Right, because people write it?
I'm not putting it on anybody. I'm just saying these are the two names that I'm seeing more than anybody else keep coming up.
All right, just realize.
Would I like to have him on my team? Yeah.
I love Palmieri. He's got a modified no trade. He submits an 18 no trade list. He is a New Jersey kid.
Yep.
Just understand that. He has one more year after this one.
Yeah.
But
what's his age?
Kyle Palmieri's 28. Obviously, Toffoli's going to come up because he's an unrestricted free agent. Mm-hmm. You know,
you look at bad teams, and you see who you might be able to get.
Yes. Yes.
Right. Well, remember last year at the trade deadline, the Bruins pick up Marcus Johansson with the idea, well, let's see if he can play alongside David Krejci. Where did he wind up? He played alongside Charlie Coyle, and it was fantastic. So I'm sure for Donnie Sweeney, if you're a general manager, you're trying to find the right fit. But ultimately, you may have to just find the best player that you can work into your lineup, whether that's at wing or center, and then readjust your lineup accordingly.
Let's go to John in Chelmsford. You're up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I'm calling about the power play, and I know I'm not the coach of this team, but I know they've been real good. But I think David Krejci should be on this top power play. Yeah, I know there's, because, for example, the last game, the Bruins got a 5-on-3, and he replaced Heinen with David Krejci, and they scored, and then took him off for the second power play, the 5-on-4, and they didn't score. You would think you would keep him in. My point is, I just think David Krejci should be on this top power play. He is one of your top players. I'm a big believer. I don't believe in two units, that you should, your first unit should always be a lethal power play. And therefore, and put him at the point instead of David Pastrnak. Put Pastrnak down in the, where he belongs, and Marchand on the other side, Bergeron on the bumper, and Krejci, since he's a defensive center, can play the point instead of Pastrnak. Therefore, they don't get beat for shorthanded goals. It's just my point, guys. I'm just hoping I get this for a
who's in front of the net?
Present. What's that?
Who's in front of the net?
I don't think they really need anybody in front of
the net. So nobody in front of the net?
The reason why I don't believe in somebody in front of the net is because I think you're kind of helping the other opposing team a little bit because you're keeping a player standing still. So basically, it's like a 4-on-4.
But you're also taking away the vision of the goaltender. That's part of the reason you have the guy there.
Who's going to get pucks? If you don't have somebody there, who's going to get them?
We're going to get into the power play a little bit more in depth later because I do want to talk about, he mentioned, you know, Danton Heinen getting time on that first power play, and I want to talk a little bit about that. We'll get into that a little bit later on today, too.
Yeah, look, it's stale right now. It's stale. They've got to figure out a way. They've got to get through it. And that being said, they've scored power play goals in three straight games, even though they haven't looked good doing it, right? Last game was a 5-on-3. So I do think that sometimes the top unit stays out a little too long.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they don't have it going and you've got to keep going back for pucks, get off the ice and get that other unit out there. And that should be a minute, you know, 10. If you're in the zone the whole time, that's a different story. But if you've got to keep retrieving pucks, then maybe it's time to get off at some point there and make that full change and give that other unit an opportunity. Has the other unit pushed them? Not probably to the degree that you'd like. Heinen and DeBrusk have flip-flopped on that spot, you know, down in front of the net. Heinen hits the post the other night. Got to be ready for that pass. When they're taking away other options, that pass is there, right to the top of the blue paint, right to the top of the crease. DeBrusk wasn't able to handle some of those passes that came through there for him. Heinen has done it a better job of that, but he hasn't been able to finish as many as you'd like either. So there's a couple plays that are down there. If they're going to take away Pastrnak, they're going to take away certain plays, whether it's Bergeron's one-timer or it's Pastrnak's one-timer from the left-wing side. The movement becomes critical, which they still have, but that pass to the guy in front of the net has to be there and has to be a threat. And I think it's a threat, but it hasn't shown up on the score sheet
sure.
as much as it should.
Bergeron's had tons of chances in the bumper because, as you allude to, it used to be teams would first take away Bergeron in the bumper. Well, now they're taking away Pastrnak because he leads the league in power play goals. But Bergeron, I think, so the Bruins, they had a hard time generating activity against.
Well, they went three power plays. They didn't have a shot on goal, and then all of a sudden they said, "We got to get pucks to the net," and that's what happened in the third period.
I think Bergeron ended up with 7 shots in that game. Keep in mind, you know, based on you know the total number that the Bruins had. So the Bruins power play 3rd best in the league, trailing only the Edmonton Oilers and the Tampa Bay Lightning, and those power plays have started to come down here a little bit. You know, and remember the Bruins were scoring at around 30%. That is a ridiculous rate. So I think at some point you were going to see a market correction. I think a lot of coaches feel that sometimes special teams, especially the power play, can be a little bit cyclical, and maybe that has happened to some extent for the Bruins. But to Bob's point, the options that are now there are Torrey Krug or somebody looking down low to Danton Heinen or Jake DeBrusk, who's ever out in front of the net on that power play.
Shoots and rest, flashed up the glove, take it away.
It's the Hockey Show.
Centered, fired, they score.
On 98.5, the Sports Hub. It's streaming on the Sports Hub app.
Sports Hub Hockey Show continues. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers, now joined here in the Town Fair Tire Studios, as we are each week at this time, by Ty Anderson of 98.5thesportshub.com. Morning.
What's going on? I think I haven't seen you guys in like a really long time. I saw you last week. Yeah. I feel like I haven't seen Bob and Judd in quite a while here.
They've been here. You weren't here.
I know.
You know, things happen.
Where were you?
You know, hey, you get pulled in all different directions sometimes, and you know, you gotta leave it to the professionals when you're out doing things besides watching the game sometimes.
So you're doing football tonight.
Yeah, I'm going to miss tonight's game at the Garden. Originally, I was going to do the double dip because it was 1 o'clock and a 7 o'clock. And I was like, I can do that. And then they moved it to 4. So I was like, nope, can't do that. So unfortunately, the AFC East clinching game, potentially, more of a priority.
Well, you were here last week as one of our hosts, and we talked at length about, you know, a topic that's already come up this morning, which is Kovalchuk and some of the other people that may or may not be available during the course of the year. Change your tune at all this week?
Well, no, I still think that there would be it would potentially interest me, but it sounds like they're not interested at all. Bob McKenzie came out with that midweek saying that they're no longer interested in that. And after the rumors came out of Russia that they were. So, okay. So now what's the next plan? I do think at some point you're going to exhaust all of your internal options here. It's just a matter of who are they waiting for. Are they waiting for Sinishin? Are they waiting for a longer run with Kuhlman? You know, what is the end game here? Are they just hoping that it naturally sort of works itself out? Because I don't know if they have the personnel to do that on line two right now. So that's my only thing. But Kovalchuk, was he going to solve it? No, I just thought it was worth a gamble. But they don't want to take that gamble.
Yeah, I mean, but you also have a couple guys that are popping down in Providence right now in Studnicka, who's still very young and still very raw in terms of he hasn't grown the muscle yet, right? And so he's still a little light. Frederick has shown, now I know he's had some signs up or some chances up here, but he's shown some, okay, it's time to get it going down in Providence from what we're hearing. I admit I haven't seen them play, but this is what I'm told. So that's good news. So that would make a coil to right wing, then bring one of these guys up as your, we'll call him a third line center, but is it really the third line? Because you're going to use Corrali. If Corrali, Wagner, and Nordstrom are playing the way that they're capable of playing, that line's going to face the other team's top lines. They're going to play more minutes than the third line, you know, in theory. So does that third/fourth line with either Frederick or Studnicka in the middle, and then you use Studnicka in an offensive situation, use Frederick more of a in a physical situations, you know, is that an option with Coyle moving up to the second line?
I mean, that seems like that might be their best play, right? Their best option to date in terms of solving that issue with Krejci and DeBrus, their line mate, has been Coyle. I think that's been the best thing. And we've talked about this before, is that I prefer Coyle in the middle, but you can't argue with results. Like, if that's your best option and the trade market, the best option is Tyler Toffoli, I'm kind of would rather ride with Charlie Coyle on the right side than trade capital for that guy.
Well, you could also, I mean, just kind of moving that forward, that if you get closer to the deadline and the market is there for a third line center or somebody like that, as opposed to, you know, and your options are better there than they are at wing, then Coyle gives you that flexibility, which is nice. You don't necessarily have to just say, well, we need to make a trade for top six winger. If that's too costly, or if the right guy isn't there, you can say, well, let's see what we can find down the middle. And
I'm still
because
more of
we
a
have
fan
Coyle
of him in the middle.
I think we all are because of the mismatches that he can create playing down the lineup like that.
Yeah, and then that argument becomes, okay, well, who is that? Is that Peugeot out of Ottawa? Is that Duclair? Like, could that be a guy that you would target?
Anthony Duclair's a winger, so
I'm just saying, like, winger, like.
Listen, I think Pageau is a terrific player. He's going to be in high demand around the National Hockey League. You're going to definitely have to give up some quality to be able to get him. Then you're pushing Charlie Coyle to the right side. And I think the one thing the Bruins will say is, if you want to try and get the best out of Charlie, and they do believe he's a center, if you are going to put him on the wing, I think that they would like to be able to keep him there, to keep him in that spot, to give him some consistency rather than have him going back and forth. Bruce Cassidy alluded to that here in the last couple of weeks, that they have had that conversation with Charlie, that, you know, we don't want to make you a yo-yo. We don't want to have you go back and forth. So they've talked about that with them. So going forward, I don't know how long that time period has to be, but I think they would like to keep him in one spot.
I mean, it makes the most sense. Like, it's just, when you watch that third line without him versus with him, it's just he's such a monster when he has the puck on his stick. And I really think that helps the game for Andre's work, because Cassie talked about it after the game. They're still trying to bring him along. And what's better for him? Is it playing with Corrales or playing with Coyle? I would have to believe it's playing with Charlie Coyle versus playing with Sean Corrales in terms of getting the most out of Bjork right now.
I think I would agree. I don't know how you'd argue.
I like Sean Corrales as my fourth line center.
Yeah,
I'll just say that.
That's the thing.
And if it's and Wagner and Nordstrom, when those guys are really playing the way that we've seen them play in the past, that line is so effective at what they do, and it hasn't been consistently there this year for them for one reason or another. So that's my fourth line. And if we're leaving Pastrnak with Bergeron, there's my top line. What comes in the middle? You know, and that's, I mean, those are all question marks. You've got the Heinens, the Bjorks, you've got Richie, you got Backes, you got Kuhlman, you've got, you know, and I'm not talking about Krejci and Coyle. So these are the other wingers that we're talking about, right? Who am I leaving out? I mean, Lindholm has been a scratch here recently. So where do all those guys fit on the second and third line? And that's still in flux. That's still a huge question for a team that's number two in the NHL.
Part of the issue as I see it, as you roll off those names, is I feel like half the time you could just pull names out of it, with the exception of maybe of DeBrusque on some nights, which, you know, in his consistency hasn't, you know, necessarily been there every night.
DeBrusque. I just
I feel like you could basically pull names out of a hat and just leave it up to fate at this point, because they try, you know, they're trying different guys in different spots and nothing's really clicked.
Now, here's another area that has been a bit of a concern for me recently. Who's your D pairs? And is it Clifton? Is it Moore? Moore just got back. He just started playing. Been okay. Mm. Clifton played the other night. Not what I'm used to seeing from Clifton. I like Grizzlick better on the left side. So that's been a bit of a hole here recently for them as well.
And then in the
bigger picture, and then they changed some of the pairs. Sorry, Judd. You know, you've seen a lot lately of Krug and McAvoy, which I've actually liked. You see McAvoy with Char, or you see Carlo with Char. So you've seen that kind of change around depending on the situation of the game.
And they were playing against a big team in the Islanders, so it was easier for Bruce Cassidy to make the switch. I think then the bigger question is going forward, since you're talking about the deep pairs, will we see Kevin Miller come back in the lineup at some point during the regular season? And if he does, how long will he be able to stay in there just based on his track record? Do you need to somehow address someone who can play the right D position?
Kevin Miller's not in the equation right now. Like, it's just – I wish he was, because I love him as a player, and I love how hard he plays. I want to see him back there, and I know that it's got to be driving him nuts not to be in there and the setbacks he's had. But right now, he's out of sight, out of mind. He's not in the equation, and you've got to move forward, assuming he's not going to be back.
He had another procedure, you know. So now
all legal though.
Yes.
Yes, but
that was clarified, right?
yes, but that's the thing. Like, you can't even factor him in right now.
Yeah.
He's another procedure, and I mean, this is a tough thing he's trying to come back from, and they do miss him, because I think that right now, to your point, you're seeing Connor Clifton's confidence is not where it was a year ago. John Moore, yeah, he's working his way back. You're noticing him for sort of the wrong reasons right now. And so that third pairing, that was a strength of theirs, you know, last year. And getting Grizzlick those matchups where he can just dominate is a huge factor. And having him in the left side, yes, 100%, yep, that's where he needs to be.
In fairness to Moore, he hasn't played a lot. So, I mean, he's got to get some more reps, and you got to see him. You know, he's got to get playing a little bit. He's missed a lot of time. So, you know, in fairness to him, you got to give him a little bit more time, but I haven't seen a lot so far.
Kevin Miller, I think the other thing that you miss, and Bruce Cassidy sort of touched on this in the bigger picture, is that that the team has somehow gotten away a little bit from its identity and what makes them the Boston Bruins, the type of hockey they play, whether it's the way they defend, how ferocious they can play, how north-south they like to play. I think that in the bigger picture, to go back to what we started the show with, okay, what are we seeing from the Bruins? And I think that Cassidy said we've sort of gotten away from our identity. Can they start to reestablish this as we're heading into the dog days, and then as we look ahead to the trade deadline and the stretch run?
Yeah, I thought it was – he talked after Thursday's loss, just kind of saying that they have to get back to doing things that will make them a good team. And they can't wait until May to block shots and to play a nastier sort of game. You look at the goals they've surrendered in recent games. These shots from right inside the blue line are clearly bothering him. Like, it's bothering him. The Boychuk, I went back, rewatched it. That's a tough shot to
I
get,
can't
to
put
get.
That on Rask at
no,
all.
No, exactly.
I couldn't even see Rask.
No, that was the – they had a
– Johnny Boychuk said he did.
The TV yeah, broadcast right. had a –
Yeah, they, from behind.
They had right? a great view yeah. from behind the shot.
You can't see
and
the
there's
net.
Five guys standing between Boychuk and Tuukka.
We counted them out.
Yeah.
Five – the puck went by five people.
Ty, fix the shootout. What? How can this – why isn't this team – I mean, I'm not saying – They need to be great, but maybe win one.
You know, Thursday they put out the best lineup possible, I thought, for that shootout. It's a skills competition. It would actually matter and bother me if they were an 8 seed, but they're not. So it's like, whatever. Like, I can't get too high or too low after a shootout loss. It's just how it is. Like, this is how they want to decide it. What I like is that the ECHL, I think they've increased overtime to 7 minutes. And it's actually led to a reduction in shootouts.
Is their union as strong as the NHLPA?
I would imagine not, but I don't know, though. I mean, it is what it is at this point, honestly. Like, I thought that, hey, you know what? This might make a difference that Pastrnak finally broke through with a shootout goal. Maybe that leads to confidence next time around. I just think when you're as good as the Bruins have been and you generate the chance that they've generated in 3-on-3, you have to trust the fact that they're going to bounce your way and you're going to avoid this whole thing.
I mean, I look, we were talking about the fact that, you know, the Bruins have had this dip in play over the past few weeks, and yet they're still getting points, which is good.
Their division lead has grown.
You know, as Bob said to start, look, 10 points up on the division. They've won one of your last 8 games, and you still have a 10-point lead in the division. So, I mean, there's a lot of positives from that. It just... You know, it feels like to me, it's like at some point, that 1 point you lose in that, like those things can add up. And you're right. If they were going to be fighting for a playoff spot, that's one thing. But it could end up meaning something down the road as far as where you get seated or home ice or whatever.
Yeah, I think for me, the bigger issue right now is just the fact that I feel like we have an incomplete puzzle with each of these Bruins games lately. It just feels like they either start strong or they finish strong. When's the last time they had a full 60-minute where they just stomped the other team? They had them down and they said, "You're not coming back in this game." You know, even the Florida game, I loved the start. I loved it. But it got dicey at the end. It's like I want to see that team come back. And I thought Torrey Krug talked about that. He said, "We got to get back to hating losing." And Charlie Coyle talked about sort of the process here. Like, he thinks that they're going to be a better team because of this. Like, they're going to learn what they can and can't get away with. And that's going to make them a better team in April and May and June if they're lucky enough.
We had a caller earlier ask about the power play. Won't go into all of his suggestions. But what have you thought of – because one of the things he specifically mentioned was Danton Heinen getting those chances. And we talked a little bit about that. What have you thought about him in that role on the first power play unit so far?
Well, they seem to flip-flop it quite a bit, right? Yeah. It all depends on the situation in terms of who's out there with that first unit. I kind of like him there. I think he's – I've noticed with that, and John Bob, you can speak to this as well, is I just feel like he's not there for the loose pucks in front of the net. I feel like he's better at retrieving behind, but in terms of the second and third chance opportunities in front of the goalie, I feel like DeBrus is a little bit better in that regard. But I'm curious what you guys see there.
I think both guys could be a little bit better in that spot. I think DeBrusk is more intense at finding pucks, like you kind of say. You know, he's going to do whatever he can to locate some of those pucks in tight like that. You know, Heinen's a little probably not as gritty in that area. Let's put it that way. I mean, Heinen does a good job at retrieving pucks. I think he's got good hands in front of the net. You know, just I'd like to see him be a little bit better, a little bit more effective, because that pass is there. There were two passes made to him the other night. One he hit the post on, and that was, you know, hard pass to the top of the crease. And that pass is there. You know, so the other day he scores, it goes off his skate, right? That was that backdoor pass. That's Marchand attacking from the left wing side. He found Pastrnak in Florida, and then against the Kings, I think it was the Kings, it was the backdoor pass to Heinen. Heinen's a lefty, so it went off his skate. But that pass is there. And the other day he hit the post on one, and then he missed on one. It was a hard pass from Marchand from the other side that he missed on. So, you know, that stick, top of the crease, back door, that's going to be there. Because teams have to, they have to respect Pastrnak, they have to respect Bergeron. They got to leave something open. And teams are packing a little bit tighter down low as opposed to, you know, pressuring out high, especially when you start to break them down when you have pressure in the zone.
And a guy like DeBrusk is definitely aware of that. He had mentioned...
Didn't he have a little sit-down with Pastrnak, you were telling me?
Yes, practice? Well, that was on the ice where he said, okay, let's switch it around, and why don't you go in front of the net, and I'll fire a couple of rockets and see if you can tip them in. And it's not as easy as I think most people think. But even Jake, talking to him early in the season, to Bob's point, at some point, that option in front of the net is not one, it's not two, and it's not three. It's probably their fourth or fifth option when they're going through their looks and they're going through their progressions, like a quarterback kind of looking over his what he's got as far as his receivers. But at some point, Jake said, that's going to be the play that it's going to be there, and we have to be able to hit it. They haven't hit it consistently. Maybe they can get better at that. If they can get better at that, that power play will be unstoppable.
The Hockey Show on your home of the Bruins, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Hour number two here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers with you in the Town Fair Tire Studios. 617-779-0985. We haven't really talked too much about him yet this morning, but I wanted to touch on Anders Bjork. You know, a guy who has shown flashes in the past, you know, had injury issues. Since he's been back here, I feel like we're seeing some progress. Since this guy, as you know, since they decided, like, we want him to play left wing, we want him to, you know, kind of find his spot. And I thought that his game the other night was really good. He was noticeable a lot in that game for the right reasons, and not just the goal that he scored. What have you guys seen out of Anders Bjork lately?
Yeah, and he's been better playing with Coyle.
Yeah,
I think that they've complemented each other fairly well, and certainly the other day they did. Yeah, I like a lot of what I've seen. There's some nights he's just a jag, right? He's just another guy, and I need to see a little bit or less of.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I think he's done a pretty good job when he's, you know, by and large. I'd like to see a little bit more, just a little bit more. You know, I think he's capable more. So, and bring that speed on a nightly basis, the young legs of speed to get in there to disrupt. You know, when DeBrusk's on his game, obviously you want to see the 27 goals that he had last year, but he's also doing a lot of other things in terms of disrupting and being in there on the forecheck and causing havoc that way. I think Bjork's not an overly physical guy, but he can certainly do that with his legs.
I think the light has been turned on for a guy like Anders Bjork this year, and it's amazing to see. I mean, this, if you look at the Bruins roster, I was thinking about this the other day, that if you look up and down, and it's not, you know, filled with tons of young players, but if you had to look at a guy who is the most improved player on the roster, at least at this point, he's got to be the guy. Charlie Coyle had mentioned when we had him on during the first intermission the other night that the two things that stand out to him are the confidence that he's playing with, but it's also the understanding, and this is to Bob's point, that he has to understand that he's got to use his legs more to be able to influence the game because he is such a good skater. Early in the season, he talked about, I think he's feeling more confident. I think he's feeling more confident in the shoulder because he's been able to recover from
he's
that.
He's taken some hits, too.
And he's gone to the hard areas in order to score, both offensively and defensively, to get pucks out. He's worked harder to do that. And I think that you're sensing an awareness and a calm and a poise from him that if he gets the puck in his own zone, he doesn't get flustered. He'll take his time. He'll try and sort it out and look at his best options. So you love the way that the curve seems to be going up for a guy like Anders Bjork, but you got to bring it. You know, that's the next step in being a pro. Fine. We saw a great game the other night. Got to be able to string those together.
Yeah. I think, coming into this season, if you had asked me, like,
I have no idea, you know, what to expect from Bjork, right? You're coming off the injury, you know, you get some time down in Providence. We, you know, kind of debated about, you know, what's the best path for this guy? You know, is he going to be able to make the leap to being a full-time NHL player? And I understand, you know, the point about the being able to see those flashes on a more consistent basis. But I think it's better than I thought it would be so far this year. I think, you know, I've seen more from him than I guess, you know, maybe my expectations were low because of the history. But I like what I've seen. And I just, like I said, that game the other night, he really stood out. And I think that's a positive in that this is a young guy who, like you said, Judd, the light's starting to go on. Like this guy, you can tell he feels like he's an NHL player at this point.
And for the coaching staff, just to jump in real quick, and this is something Bruce Cassidy mentioned maybe about a week or so ago, that they've toyed with the idea of moving him back to the right side. So that is something that we could see here in the last half of the season.
I mean, I'd be hesitant to monkey with it yet. You know, maybe a little bit more of what you're getting right now, and I'd start to consider that. Wouldn't it be funny if he turned out to be the right winger that we've been waiting for all these years? I wouldn't argue with it, but I'm not sure that I'd be ready to pull the trigger on that one quite yet. JP is in North Providence. You're up next on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Johnson, Bearsy, Judd, No Slim. Good morning, guys. Nice to talk hockey. I heard there's a football game today, too.
Something like that.
So I get an observation, a wish, and a question. My observation is when I watch the Bruins now, I'm 60, so I've been watching them a while, and you guys see it at the game in and game out. It's like the Patriots. Cover Edelman, cover White. You got them done. You cover Pasternak, you cover Marchand, the eyeball test says you're shutting down the rest of the team, as an observation. As something I noticed a month ago with the shootouts, we're losing a lot of games in overtime. I don't know if we're fading. We're not scoring. Stamkos came down about a month ago, went right down the ice and said to himself, top corner, boom, like it was nothing. And I don't see that from our shooters. Which leads me to, I take a flyer on Kovalchuk if nobody signed him and just put him on the power play. I don't know what you guys think, but I think that's where we're lacking.
That's not the way that this team operates. That's not the way that this team is built, right? They want to be deep. They want to be able to, you know, roll different guys in different situations. They don't need a power play. You certainly don't need a power play specialist on this team.
Yeah, they're third in the league on the power play, and because it was so hot early in the season, they've dipped a little bit recently. You assume that they're going to get it back. I do agree with, you know, if team's game plan for a game, you know, how are we going to stop the Bruins? Well, we got to be hard on Pasternak, we've got to be hard on Marchand, and see, let other guys try to beat us. So I would agree with that. You know, that would be a game plan for me if I'm coming in as an opposing team. You know, and you've seen teams to be physical and try to be physical. We saw some of that, you know, especially some of the top teams. And hey, that's, get used to it. That's going to be part of it. So, you know, and until you got other guys beat you, then that's going to continue to be game plans coming in. But so is that a game plan for teams when they go play the Edmonton Oilers? Right? Stop McDavid and stop Dreisel. Yeah. Sometimes it's not that easy.
I don't think they've won a game where those guys go scoreless.
Yeah, well, they've been bad here recently. They've lost a lot of games recently, including last night. So, sure, that would be, you know, if I'm an opposing coach coming in or staff coming in, you're circling two guys right off the top. They say we got to stop these guys. How do we stop them? You know, and if it's a power play, we deny Pasternak the puck in certain areas. Now that's why he's got to move more, which he does. You know, doesn't be stationary in the left wing side. Marchand does the same thing. So, you know, that has to continue. You got to get different looks if you're not going to have that look from, you know, when was, you know, how many chances has he had? There's been a couple, I shouldn't say, but they don't stand out as much. He's not getting as many shots from that left wing circle in the one timer, right? Teams adjust. So now you have to adjust. And they do. They move around. They've had some looks and not so much the other day against the Islanders, you know, in the first couple of power plays. It took a 5-on-3 in order to get it done. But, you know, I think that they've had some looks and been a little snake betting around the net as well.
Well, all of a sudden the offense, if you look in the big picture, I think they have 16 goals in their last seven games. Bruce Cassidy was grousing on the road trip at times that, hey, we need more from lines 2 and 3. we've already outlined, hey, Brad Marchand has gone 11 games without a goal. I think you have to go
still
back.
Still picking up points. Still leads the team.
Yeah, he's got like 8 points in those 11 games.
He's still generating opportunities. He is still getting looks. And that's what
I thought he passed up a couple chances to shoot the other day, right?
Then he got the memo.
The two-on-ones. maybe against the Kings?
Yes.
Was it against the Kings? Against the Kings, yeah. He had 2 two-on-ones. He tried to pass both of them. And I thought he was in good shooting position. I don't like second-guessing a guy that's that good. But I think that, you know, had he had an opportunity to do it over again, he might have said, okay, I'm going to take these shots.
That's one of the questions this morning, I think, for a guy like Bruce Cassidy. You got a guy who he registered 100 points last year, and he's still picking up points. He's top four in the league at this point. But yet you still see, hey, there's more opportunities out there for him. So how do you be able to coax that out of him? How do you coach in that situation to be able to get more out of a guy who's already one of the elite players in the league again?
Well, just going back to the caller's point, is, you know, if you look at, we've been talking about this 8-game stretch right now where the Bruins have one win. You know, Marchand has no goals in that stretch. Pasternak's been held off the scoreboard 6 of those 8 games. He's got 3 goals in that stretch, but they were, you know, one included a 2-goal night. So
Charlie Coyle's been stuck on 99 goals here for a while. I know he's generating some opportunities. David Krejci, even though he had a goal and an assist the other night in Florida, I think across the last 8 or 9 games, there hasn't been as much production. Jake DeBrusk has sort of scored in fits and starts. Dan Heinen and Anders Bjork with their goals here in the last couple of games. I want to say for Bjork, that was maybe his first in 11 or 12. When Dan Heinen scored the goal the other night, that was his first in 11. So when you're seeing these numbers, I think you can see sort of the bigger picture to go along with the power play. And we've seen it drop down here a little bit and seen a market correction, why the Bruins are having some problems stringing together wins.
We'll get back to your calls here coming up at 617-779-0985. I want to go way back toward the beginning of the show because we kind of glossed over it to get to other points. But caller early in the show brought up defensively McAvoy and Carlo. You know, we were talking about Anders Bjork and kind of, you know, the light going on for him. Those guys, obviously, contract situations this past offseason and all of that having to get worked out. You know, you sign those new deals, maybe a little bit extra pressure on your shoulders. How do you feel like their consistent development has gone in the early part of this season for both of those guys?
Slow start. Have been better lately. McAvoy's been really good. Really good. Really noticeable. Really good. Noticeable for the right reasons. Playing hard, physical, strong. I know he has no goals. I get it. I understand that. That'll come. The chance he set up for Bjork the other night, you know, just being strong, coming down the wall, around the net, you know, and that was that great save by Varlamov. Mm-hmm. But what I've seen from McAvoy has been real good. And I do like him with Torrey Krug. You know, when they kind of freeze both of them up to get creative and go and do their thing. So, I you know, and they play them a lot, you know, in the offensive zone faceoffs. They'll put them out there together. So I think after a bit of a slow start, it's coming. There's certain areas I think that he needs to be better in, reading the rush, reading, you know, who to take. Kind of depending on where the rush is initiating from and how many, you know, whether it's a 3-man rush or it's a 2-on-2 or even whatever the case is, you know, different situations call for different actions. And I do think that area of his game still needs to come around a bit. But being assertive and being a difference maker, he's done that. And I think Carlo's gotten better as the season's gone on as well. I thought he had a bit of a slow start. He was getting beat, which, you know, that shouldn't happen. He's got good feet. He's got good quickness, got a long reach. You know, he was getting beat earlier in the year on a couple of occasions. I haven't seen that nearly as much here recently. You know, he's not going to be as dynamic as a McAvoy in terms of what he brings, but being that shutdown guy. So whether he's playing with Krug or whether he's playing with Chara, you know, making sure that you're not scored upon, and that's, for me, that's and being a good penalty killer, I think he's been better in that area. So I like what I've seen from both of those guys here recently.
From from McAvoy, is, you know, the offensive perspective, that's the one that, you know, people look at, and as you said, no goals.
Well,
you know,
that's yeah.
You know, that stands out.
Yep.
You know, and the knock on him if there is one, has been like, we got to get this guy to shoot more. We've been talking about this, I feel like, since he came into the league, that he's got a good shot. He's, you know, I think you've pointed out in the past that he's got a real knack for getting the puck through.
This is going back a couple of years. I mean, I'm talking World Juniors, you know, college. I thought when I watched him anyhow, yeah, you know, and maybe he was running the power plays up top. He was, you know, whether it's wrist shots, you know, doesn't necessarily, we don't see a lot of one-timers. We've actually seen a couple one-timers from him recently, but you don't see a lot of that from him. So it's more, okay, just making sure shots get through. Yeah, a little reluctant to shoot sometimes, you know, or they don't get through. But so I think once it starts to come, kind of the floodgates open a bit for him. Offensively, I mean, mm-hmm. He's not on the top power play unit. And I said, you know, we've said that sometimes that top unit, they stay out there a long time. And that second unit doesn't get as many looks or as many opportunities. And he's playing, it's him and Grizzlick at the point on the second unit. So I think the points will come for him. I just like the way he's played here recently a lot. And if he plays like this, those points will come.
Look, and there's the minutes that he's getting on a nightly basis. I mean, he's, you know, you look at his game log, the last four games, almost 28 minutes, 25 minutes, 26 minutes, 20. He went 28 minutes against the Islanders the other night.
Well, he leads the team in minutes played by 2 minutes, almost 2 minutes, right? He's 23:04 and Chara's 21:13. So, you know, he's, yeah. You
can, I mean, they're leaning on this kid.
Yes.
They're
because,
leaning
because
on him.
Because they see the way he's playing.
Well, and because, like, he's that good. I mean,
yes.
he's good enough that they can count on him to give him those types of minutes. And he's a young guy, so he's got the, you know, little extra starch in the legs that you can count on,
and
in those
you
situations.
You know, he rises to those physical occasions as well. So, beginning of the year, I was like, all right, you know, come on, got to get going a little bit here. Both those guys, you know, and now you're seeing it.
Let's go to Vinny and Revere. You're up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
What's up, guys? Love the show, as always.
Thank you.
I just wanted to chat real quick about a couple small things. If you go back to June, right, everybody says the same thing. Oh, this was the last year. Bruins aren't going to have a chance. Toronto's, you know, really coming up, and Tampa's going to be the team to beat. And I just feel like we're putting a little bit too much pressure on the last couple losses. I know everybody, oh, they've lost this many out of this many. I don't see it as losses, and I know it goes in the loss column in overtime, but you're still getting points against really good teams. And I just feel like a couple people might be hitting the panic button. And, you know, I just don't like that attitude of, oh, well, they should be winning all these games. They're still a top team. The NHL has them as, you know, in the power rankings as the number two team still. And, you know, I just wanted your opinion on that, about hitting that panic button when there's really no need to. They're ahead of the schedule right now.
It's not even necessarily – look, I understand the point that you're making, you know, about the standings and the points. It's – again, I think from my perspective, if they were playing great games and, you know, a bad bounce goes your way, or you're playing against the top teams in the league and you find, you know, sometimes you're going to lose those games, it happens. I just feel like we're not seeing – a consistent level of play. That's what concerns me is, you know, we've seen in the past, I mean, I don't think we're going to see it necessarily with the Bruins this year, but what happened with Tampa Bay last year? They got out to a huge lead. They cruised through the regular season. They got to the postseason and they got dumped in four games. You know, I think there's something to be said for the 82 game schedule, the struggle that brings, you know, grinding it out night after night, finding ways to win games. And I don't want to see any measure of complacency with this team creep in. And I think we've seen a little bit of that. And I think we talked about that earlier. And I think that's something that, you know, we're going to see them continue to focus on eliminating from their game and get back to trying to play the 60-minute game that Ty mentioned. We haven't seen that much of. They're good enough that they've won a lot of games without necessarily being good for 60 minutes.
No, and how many teams are good for 60 minutes every night? It's just,
it's an impossible standard.
Yeah, you're not going to see it. But you look at some of the games, you know, I'm just going back, even when they were still winning, you know, when they had that winning streak going, so those games they were coming from behind in.
Yeah.
They were giving up some really good opportunities. Their goalies were bailing them out here and there. And, you know, they actually played a good game against Washington. They played a pretty good game against Tampa. They lost both of those games in regulation. So there's been some good games, some better games that they've played. They just maybe haven't been rewarded for some of those. So I mean, I'm certainly not hitting the panic button.
No.
If you put it in perspective, they, you know, would you 36 games in the season, if you said you were 10 points up on the next closest team in your division, I think
take that every day,
right? But it doesn't mean that there's issues that need to be addressed and you got to try to get yourself out of this. You knew that there was going to be a wall. They talked about it. It was they weren't hiding from it, but now you got to fight through it. And I don't know what Torrey Krug's exact words were, but I heard something the other day where he just is like, at some point you got to be sick of losing, and you know it's time to turn this thing around.
I think there's also a little bit of frustration because of some of the teams that we've seen them lose to in the last few. I mean, you're losing to, you know, Chicago and Ottawa and the Kings the other night. Is like, these aren't exactly, you know, they've lost to Detroit this year. Like, these aren't good hockey teams. These aren't the kind of hockey teams you should be losing to. And I think that enters into the frustration as well. Is, you know, it's great to see them play well against Tampa or Washington, but you also got to take care of business against the lesser teams in the league.
If you're
a good team.
And the shootouts, I don't get overly worked up about. I mean, I wish they were better in them, obviously, but two goals scored the other night were pretty good by the Islanders.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, Barzal's goal, and I can't remember who had the other one. Nice goals. Yeah. But so, yeah, I wish they were better in that area. If they were .500 in that area, you know, you've got even a bigger lead than you do. So, but, you know, some teams like the Islanders have lived off, like, shootout and overtime, and there's a couple other teams around the league that you look at how many overtime and shootout games that they've had. Bruins are tied for the league lead, at least they were as of yesterday or the day before, in wins in regulation. And that's the number one tiebreaker. It used to be regulation or overtime wins. And I didn't even know this until recently. Somebody brought it to my attention. It's now wins in regulation is the number one tiebreaker.
Really? I didn't realize that either.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, because that actually is a column in the standings now. It's not just regulation overtime wins. It's regulation wins.
Yeah.
They took the O out.
And they were tied with Colorado as of the other day for number one in the league.
Black and gold freight train.
All things Bruins and the NHL. It's the Hockey Show on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
.5, the Sports Hub and the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston and Bob Beers here in the Town Fair Tire Studios. And now joining us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline to go around the NHL is Mr. Billy Jaffe. Morning, Billy.
And good morning. Hey, before we get going, Beersy, you remember when you used to go play the Blackhawks and you'd walk on the ice? Remember the song you'd hear? Here Come the Hawks, the Mighty Blackhawks. You ever hear that song? That little tune?
All I saw was just come up the stairs.
Got to walk up the stairs.
This last step is onto the ice, and that crowd, they were ready to go right in.
Oh, well, that I was just saying, that jingle that Tommy was playing coming in, that bump was like a mixture of Here Comes Santa Claus and Here Come the Hawks, it sounded like. And that was what a great place that old barn was. I grew up there, you know, and so you had the beauty of playing. I skated there once, but as a little kid. But what a place that was. And that song would come on, and it wasn't. They used to make, I heard there's a story in the old days, because they had the horn underneath the scoreboard there. Sometimes they'd have players go, they'd say to like referees or rookies, like after the goal scored, go right over there to the rookie ref, and the guy would get his ears blown out. But it was a great place. Wow, what a fun place. Anyways, good morning. How are you guys doing?
Doing good. Taylor Hall is a member of the Arizona Coyotes. Big news this week. What'd you think of the deal? Are you surprised that Arizona takes a swing at him at this point?
No, not at all. No, not at all, considering that I'd heard them and Colorado all along as the teams that were willing to give up, especially better prospects. I was asked this earlier in the week. I don't know. I know the ball kid is 6'7", like already 200-something pounds, big, you know, burly defender. I know Kenny Danico likes him. But, you know, I don't know these kids that they gave up. They gave up a lot, though. But the fact is that the Arizona Coyotes can't score a lot. And so this is as natural a fit, as far as I'm concerned, as there was for Taylor Hall. I also think that Hall could flourish out there for this short amount of time. I think Rick Tocchet is excellent at getting through to players. I know that Kessel hasn't scored as much as they would like, but he's still great at handling, managing them. And I think you're going to see a guy with, even though he's going to want to produce and he's going to be playing for playoff position, et cetera, I don't think there's nearly as much pressure on him. And I think Taylor Hall will succeed because of that, RJ.
Do you think there's, you know, or I won't say is there a chance, but what do you think are the chances that this is more than a half a season in Arizona?
Only thing I can say is this. I have no idea because they got a lot of hockey to play. Let's see how the results are. I still think they're going to be battling for playoffs. I don't know if they're a sure thing, by the way. But the owner out there, the new owner, fellas, has a ton of money. Think like Jeff Vinnick money. Think big, you know what I mean, for new owners. As far as new owners go, they're up against, I don't have their salary cap in front of me, but they're spending money and with regard to players' salaries. So can they? He's going to want at least 10. And I don't know what you think, Beersy. I mean, you know, he's going to want Mitch Marner, Austin Matthews. He might consider himself Connor McDavid-esque, you know, money. You're talking 10.5 to 11 plus. That's a ton of money for a guy like that, but he might just get it from somebody like that.
Yeah, I mean, I love the deal for Arizona, I really do. I mean, nobody knows, or unless you're watching Tucson play every day or the OHL, nobody knows, right, the prospects, is, you know. And certainly people know them, but I'm saying just the people out there. So there's no way to judge right now, today, who's going to get the better of this deal. But I love it for Arizona, I really do. I mean, I think he's a difference maker. He's got to be healthy, but he's a difference maker. He's someone that adds another element. He's going to make players, you know, will he make players around him better? He's not a gifted goal scorer.
No.
But he's going to create chances, and he's going to open things up for other guys. So I think from Arizona's standpoint, who are, by the way, tied for first place out in the Pacific Division with 44 points, I really do like it for them.
It's a it's an interesting scenario. There's a lot of, I mean, I'm playing kind of, not conspiracy theorist, but whatever. I'm hot stoving it. I'm too far out hot stoving it. There's a lot of people who think that Austin Matthews has a good chance of ending up back in Arizona in, what, 3 more years he's gotten his deal? 3-4 years? You imagine, that would be a good duo out there.
From Arizona, but, right? That makes a lot of sense. By the way, Arizona's, they're the, cap-wise, they're number one in the league. They're, yeah.
Well, they have some dead space because they believe, because of taking on contracts, right, to reach the floor originally.
Long-term injury, they have Marian Hossa and Nicholas Jarmelson. Yeah, and then they have a buyout of Mike Ribeiro.
Oh, so you got Ribeiro. I forgot about that one. So that should be coming off soon. But
yeah,
this guy, the new owner, has got a ton of money. I mean, tons. And so he's willing to spend. It'd be interesting.
Yeah, I mean, as you said, they're leading the division, but they're also, you know, potentially in a fight just for a playoff spot because everything is so tightly packed out there, too.
They're also in a fight for fans as well, for fans. Well,
that, I was going to bring that up.
Checks
I think
that
it's,
box.
It would be huge for this organization with the ownership situation finally settled out there. It would be huge for this organization just to get to the playoffs and become relevant in the market. So that they can draw fans on a regular basis, and certainly he helps that.
Well, in theory, he does. He should be able to bring some offensive charisma to this team. Looking at their numbers right now, Nick Schmaltz, 27 points, really having a nice year for Nick. I mean, Nick Schmaltz was traded from Chicago last year. 27 points, 37 games, but otherwise they have two guys with more than 10 goals, and one of them is former Bruin Carl Soderberg, and the other is Connor Garland. Kid, I really love. I'm thrilled for Connor. Kid from the Scituate area, if I remember correctly, exact town. He's doing beautifully, but I mean they're not an offensive juggernaut, and if they can bring some production and maybe free up Phil Kessel a bit, and Phil the Thrill can get going, then the fans out there, you're right, fellas, will have a big thrill. I look at this team, and now look, Kemper got hurt the other night, and I believe the term is week to week. So can Antti Raanta now lead them? Even though a year ago they thought he'd be their number one, Kemper took over that role. Can Antti Raanta be the guy? So I'm not ready to say anoint them as a guaranteed playoff team. I'm not. The Pacific may help them. It's not a great division, fellas, so maybe, you know, I'll look at that. But I still say they got to earn it, and they do have to in my book.
Well, throughout the course of the show today, a number of names are coming up about guys who the Bruins might have some interest in around the league. It's still pretty early. We're still a couple of months out before the deadline, and, you know, the teams may be reluctant to make moves. Are there guys out there that you're focusing on here over the next month that maybe the Bruins might be able to pry free a little bit closer to now than before the end of the deadline?
Well, I know there's two schools of thought. I think one is the teams that are real bad, do they want to get something? It comes down to their general manager. Do you believe you can get more if you do it now and make a bigger hockey trade, or do you wait until that trade deadline? I'm pretty much stating the obvious. I heard a couple of segments. I've heard the names that you guys threw out there. Not when I say you guys, I mean different people. Whether it was a Kyle Palmieri, I mean in the past, it's there's been the rumblings of Bruins would love a guy like Josh Anderson. Well, who wouldn't? I mean, what about Alex Tuch? Well, yeah, again, okay, sure. Now, to me, a deal with a team like Vegas could make sense earlier than later, as they need to add to their defense. They absolutely need to. Now, can the Bruins afford to move one of their defense? Maybe you could then get a pry guy like, Tuck, who played his college hockey at Boston College, and that would look nice. Are there other teams? Well, Ottawa, to me, is the team that they're having some guys, and I believe I heard it was two segments ago, you talked about Pageau, you talked about Duclair. I'm not convinced about Duclair. I look at him in a non-strenuous, playing with house money environment. The coach is letting him go. Boy, he didn't flourish in Columbus, right, Beersy? Wasn't that where Tortorella said the kid can't play in the league?
and
that's coaching, too. So you got to say, look, with the right kind of coach, he is better. I'm not 1,000% convinced, though, that come playoff time, he's going to be interior enough for me and play in that situation. But, RJ, I could throw out a ton of names here and there. I already gave you some, but I can't tell you that there's one in particular. Ideally, I would love a right shot for that Krejci side, but I'm also not against looking at something for the back end too, some size. I'm not.
See, that's interesting, because I think most people look at it and go, well, that's where your strength is, right? I mean, at least from a depth perspective. I think it's interesting the way you put that. It's like you don't necessarily need help back there, but, a little bit of a different player back there might help, right? A different type of player.
Absolutely. And I know that
Kevin Billington.
Yeah, I mean, yes, 1,000% yes, Beersy. And I mean, I don't like to play armchair GM, because I know that deals are not that easy to swing anymore. And if you overpay, but meaning the long term, but it helps you in the short term. It's like the fans sometimes they don't relish the fact that you get that in the short term, that bump, because the long term it might not end up being as good a deal. But these aren't easy deals to make. I mean, who doesn't want, again, a big, right, powerful right winger? Who wouldn't like a big, powerful guy that can play 16 to 17, 18 minutes on the back end, too? But this is where Donnie can get creative, I think. Bobby, you and I and Judd talked about it the other night. Creativity will be key. And they sometimes there may be addition by subtraction too from your lineup if there's certain deals to be made.
Well, let's talk about a few of the teams are around the league that are maybe positive, negative this week. The Pittsburgh Penguins are out to a 4-game winning streak coming into today. They've started to find it. They're that division. I think Judd mentioned it earlier, that Metro division. Looks really tough, and Pittsburgh is they're 11 games above 500, and they're a wild card right now in that division.
Yeah, and Pittsburgh's doing it really the whole season without either Malkin or Crosby together, and at times without both. And they're doing it with Tristan Jarry. I didn't see who played their game last night. Forgive me. I know that they didn't they keep both Dreisaitl and McDavid off the board there last night, but it's a it's an interesting team. It's an interesting division. Carolina goes out and they're playing with speed. The Islanders, I wouldn't say they're playing with speed, but they're playing with size and structure. We know what the Caps are already. Another wild card is the Philadelphia Flyers. They've won a couple in a row, at least, and then they're in a nice stretch right now. How about Beersy? I love Travis Konechny.
He's having a good year. He's leading them in scoring.
Yeah, right shot, almost Brad Marchand-like out there, you know, in his size and his style, and you know, for comparison's sake. It is, RJ, a really good division. It's a division that you don't look at except perhaps Washington, and you say, wow, these dynamic team that's going to scare me. But the fact is that they're playing each other so much, and they're still doing well, and they're doing well against the rest of the league, too, that this, you know, you could look at this division and say, boy, I could see how this, whoever comes out of this division may be tired, but they're also going to be really battle-tested from a real tough regular season. I do think that they've got, I mean, this legitimate chance, obviously, for five teams out of the Metro to get out, and just three from the Atlantic.
Yeah, there's five right now that are in the playoffs. Florida and Buffalo, Tampa, they have a better chance at making the top three in the Atlantic, because they do a better chance there than they do to make the wild card. Here's a team for you that I want to know if they're going to make the playoffs or not. Nashville, that's the team tonight.
Not until Pecorine and UC Saros get their save percentage above .910. They're wildly. You want to talk about split personality? It's pretty evident. When they've actually had good possession numbers, and I'm not Mr. Analytics here, but I looked at a few things in Beersy. They actually have great possession numbers a lot, 14 times this year. They have over 55%. Now, it doesn't guarantee wins, but if you get some saves, I think it really does, kind of. Now, I'm throwing wins and losses, including overtime shootout stuff in the till here. But they're only 5 wins out of 14 times that they've dominated on the possession. So they're not getting saves. And Beersy, if they don't get saves, no, they're not going to make the playoffs. The one thing I would say, I mean, they're battling right now. It looks like 4 teams each from the Central and the Pacific, at least it feels right now, halfway through the year almost, will be it. But they've got Minnesota, who's, I think, I don't know about you if you agree with me, Beersy, but are they overplaying a bit right now? Maybe they'll come back down a bit, and maybe Winnipeg will settle down a little bit. I've been very impressed with Winnipeg. If Winnipeg continues playing like this, I think Nashville's going to have a very hard time sneaking into the playoffs.
Yeah, Dallas is a bit of a wild card there, too. They're right in the middle of it.
Boy, did they get their backsides handed to them last night. How about Noel Achari? Noel Achari, 2 hat tricks in a couple of days, including a penalty shot. There, right there, folks, is your Boston Bruins solution to the shootout. Right there.
and Achari, I was just, you know, they were just showing it this morning on NHL Network. The 3 goals last night were in the space of less than 4 minutes.
I know. Amazing. And 2 hard-working goals, 1 great shot, 1 in tight, and then a penalty shot. And the gap-tooth grin of Noel Achari, Rhode Island zone, was prevalent. Good for him. Wonderful guy. Wonderful to see that.
Well, as we preview tonight's game against Nashville for the Bruins, you mentioned the goaltending that the Predators have been getting, and I mean the numbers are not great. .894 nope. Matching .894 save percentages. This feels like, you know, we were talking earlier about Marchand's 11 game scoring drought and you know, the power play's been a little stagnant. This feels like it could be a get-right game for the offense tonight.
Well, don't forget, though, they felt like they had a get-right game 2 games ago when they went in and beat, wait for it, the New York Islanders 8-3, the team that the Bruins just lost to. You know, they were on the road. They beat the Rangers the night before.
Oh, they can score. They're top 5 in scoring.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they're led by 2 defensemen. Yep. I'm a huge fan of Roman Josi. I like Ryan Ellis a lot, too, but Roman Josi, to me, a beautiful skater, great player all around. They're top 5, top 6. Even Nick Bonino can score a bunch of goals. Johansson hasn't had as productive as a year, but yet we know that he can be impactful. They're actually being led in goals this month by I think the smallest player in the NHL size-wise, in Rocco Grimaldi. I think he's 5'5", maybe 5'6", maybe, with skates on, as Fletch would say. But I just think that, you know, look, this team, it's kind of feast or famine form. I do feel that they are going to be absolutely, I'm talking about antenna up tonight for this Bruin game. Beersy, the last couple of years, these two teams have had pretty intense games, almost rivalry-esque type games. I remember, was it in Nashville last year? It was incredibly physical, Austin Watson getting involved. I look for this. I hope the Bruins are ready. I think they will be ready. These last two games before the holiday break should be awesome. This should be a fun, physical type of game tonight. And yes, I thoroughly expect Nashville. If they win tonight, they go 3-0-1 on the road trip. And they'll say, like, hey, that's awesome. They put an awful lot of mustard into this road trip before.
All right, Billy, we appreciate the time as always. You guys starting at 6 tonight?
Yes, we are. 6 o'clock on this and pregame, full hour.
Sounds good. Thanks, Billy.
Have a nice day, guys.
He joins us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Judd and Bob, of course, will have the call of that one as well.
You're listening to the Sports Hub Hockey Show on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Imagine a place where you are never far from your next adventure. Welcome to Prince Edward Island, Canada, a destination where the breathtaking views rejuvenate the soul. Discover 700 miles of coastline with white sand beaches and red cliffs, the freshest flavors from land and sea, world-class golf, outdoor adventures, and authentic cultural experiences. Come find your island, Prince Edward Island, the official travel destination of the NHL and a proud partner of the Boston Bruins. Learn more at explorepei.com.